Welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for being here, and thank you for joining us wherever you are around the world. This is a Meet the Author event in which Professor Klaus-Dieter Mathis will discuss his new book, Maitripa, India's Yogi of Non-Dual Bliss, with Lopan Dr. Karma Punso. So drawing on Maitripa's autobiographical writings and literary work, this book is the first comprehensive portrait of the life and teachings of this influential Buddhist master. In the book, Dr. Mathis also offers the first complete English translation of Maitripa's teachings on non-conceptual realization, which is the foundation of Mahamudra meditation. Dr. Mathis spent many years living in Nepal as the director of the Nepal Research Center and the Nepal German Manuscript Preservation Project in Kathmandu from 1993 to 2001. He obtained a PhD from Marburg University with a translation and study of the Yogacara text, the Dharma Dharmata Vibhanga. He is currently the head of the Department of South Asian, Tibetan, and Buddhist Studies at the University of Vienna. He's also been a great friend of Tsadra Foundation over the years, and along with his many books and articles on Mahamudra, Buddha nature, Shentong, Maitripa, and many other Buddhist topics, he has hosted a number of important conferences and workshops around the world. Our host, Lopan Dr. Karma Punso, is the recipient of Tsadra Foundation's Writer in Digital Residence Grant for Buddha Nature Studies. Karma Punso is one of Bhutan's leading intellectuals and completed both monastic training in the Tibetan traditions, as well as a doctorate at Oxford. He is the founder and president of the Loden Foundation in Bhutan, and his work is well known across the Himalayas and in Buddhist study circles around the world. So without further ado, please welcome Professor Mathis joining us from Vienna, Austria, and Karma Punso joining us from Thimphu in Bhutan.
Well, thank you very much for your kind words and for hosting presentation of my new book. It's fascinating to be able to speak in this format to so many of you who are interested here. Welcome to the audience also. And I'm excited to the conversation we are going to have.
Yes, indeed. Yes. Kuzo Zangpo to everyone from Bhutan. There are 73 participants at the moment on Zoom, and I think it's going up. And there may be people also on Facebook. So what a great pleasure to have all of you, and particularly Professor Mathis. Nice to have you back on this forum. This is actually the first one of the series we are having on Meet the Author kind of book series. And it's a pleasure to really go through your work and discuss it with you. You know, I've, of course, been born in a semi-Kagyu family, have been familiar with the Kagyu traditions, but had very little knowledge of who Maitripa is or was and what his writings deal with. And last 2 days going through your book was a real eye-opener, a fantastic work of about 383 pages, rich indexes, bibliography, 599 notes I found. So very, very rich in information, fantastic summaries and translations. So a wonderful contribution. I want to ask you, begin by asking you how you got into Maitripa initially. So can you tell us a bit about your encounter with Maitripa and his tradition?
Well, I was very much interested in the Maitreya works, the Dhamma Dhammata Vibhaga and the Gyulama especially. And Maitripa was the one who rediscovered these texts and passed them on. Mm-hmm. So that was one reason I got interested in Maitripa. And the other is the, like I when I looked at the works of Maitripa, I could sense, you know, this freshness of Saraha, this direct cutting through to the nature of mind, you know, this freshness of, you know, like going directly to an encounter with luminosity and Buddha nature. Mm. And so I got very much interested in this transmission lineage, which goes back to Saraha, then Shavaripa and Nagarjuna, the tantric Nagarjuna was in between also, and then Maitripa. And for a Kagyu Buddhist, of course, you know, like Maitripa is nearly as important or should be as important as Naropa and the Tilopa. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that was my main reason. And then as I was working on Gyulotsava Shenupel's commentary on the Gyulama, I discovered that Gyulotsava was trying to read, or he read Sutra Mahamudra into the Gyulama. And that means, you know, like that you have a direct approach to the true nature of mind in a similar way as when you are doing formal tantric practice, completion stage practice, but based on sutras, based on non-tantric texts. And he always quoted again and again Maitripa's Tattvadarshaka and Sahajavatra's commentary. So I got a bit more interested and discovered that the Tattvadarshaka, text on of 10 verses on true reality, is embedded in a whole cycle, the so-called Amanasikara cycle. And then I discovered that you cannot look at the Tattvadarshaka independent of this cycle. And then I got interested in the cycle, and so I edited and studied the texts and translated them. Yeah, with the help of so many, especially Trungpa Rinpoche, like in the 2000, in the 00 years, 2001 to 2005, I was quite often in Kathmandu and had a chance to visit Trungpa Rinpoche and ask difficult passages and got very good and profound explanations.
I think we will come to the philosophical points in Tattvadarshaka and other texts by Maitripa. But before we do that, Maitripa, now his life, most people don't know. And he also went by many names, Vajra, Maitripada, Maitrigupta, Avadhutipa. So tell us a little bit that you already captured in the book, but the big sort of events in his life.
Yeah, that's a very good point, because there are different publications now which refer to Maitripa under different names. And so Maitripa, with a long R at the end, is a vernacular Indian short form of Maitripada, which basically means Mr. Laugh. So if you translate... and then, you know, like there's also you find Maitrigupta, Maitripa, Maitripada, Maitrigupta. These were the ordination names, like the monks' names of Maitripa. And I prefer when you generally refer to a person, like I prefer the Tibetan tradition of using the ordination name and not the secret tantric name. Advayavatra is a secret tantric name, and quite a few texts are signed by Advayavatra. So I that's the reason why I prefer Maitripa and not Advayavatra. To make it complete, you find two texts where Maitripa also goes under the name of Maitreyanatha. In the commentary on the Sika Nirdesha, and also in a text called the Gyulama Dampa, which is a special pith instructions on the Gyulama. But I find it very confusing to refer to Maitripa as Maitreyanatha, because everybody thinks of the future Buddha and the one who started the Yogacara school.
One thing that I was always curious about way back when I was beginning my monastic training is Maitripa is often given the title Ngada Maitripa. And I was wondering why he got that sovereign master Maitripa. It's quite rare to refer to a lama or a master with such a royal title. And he was not a prince, was he?
Well, I mean, one has to say he was born to a very high standing Brahmin family, and his tantric consort Gangadhara was the princess of the king of Malabar. So on a worldly level, maybe we are not aware of that, but Maitripa must have been considered like the high ranking social figure. So it could be related to that, yeah, that it was just, you know, like not royalty, but, you know, like kind of, you know.
Yeah, it's so married into royalty.
Gölöt-Szava, he says that Mahakala helped him to get this consort, you know, to get the princess of the king of Malabar. Yeah,
but this leads this leads me to the next question. And was it monk or a lay practitioner, and or was it both at different stages in his life?
Because that's a very juicy question, isn't it? I mean, it's difficult to say because the sources about his life are to some extent contradictory. Yeah, some say like that he was ordained when he was 18 or 19, but then in the Sanskrit version of his life story, like he got ordination only 28 years after having studied Buddhism, and then he started to get interested in Vinaya and all that. And so it means, you know, like he would have become a monk only when he was in his 40s or in his late 40s. So it's all very contradictory. And then, you know, like we even don't know whether it was possible during his time, like to have a tantric consort as a monk. Because, you know, like we find in some Sanskrit tantric texts that a monk could have like a consort, a female, like an actual woman as a consort, if he has a realization of like mind only or emptiness, and if the monk is able to perceive his consort as a tantric deity, and if the monk doesn't have like the ordinary attachment to a woman, then it is permissible. I mean, that's what Vakishvara Kirti, for example, says. And, and there's another interesting fact. We found in the Kaiser Library in Kathmandu a Himachra Tantra Tika, a Sanskrit version, which was written in an early Magadhi script, end of 12th century probably, from Vikramashila monastery. And in the end of the text, it is said, well, this was the library copy, or this was a copy produced for the library of Vikramashila monastery. And that's very, very interesting, because if a text is officially part of a monastery library, it means it needs to be protected. So if the text is eaten up by insects or something, a monk has to sit down and copy it and prepare a fresh copy. And it means also that like Himachra Tantra, which was the main tantra for Maitripa, was part of the monastic mainstream in the 12th century. So it is very difficult to say. And Harunaka Isaacson, he opines that Maitripa never stopped being a monk. Like so he never, like notwithstanding all his tantric practices and his roaming around and having a consort and the princess of the king of Malabar, but I don't know whether we can like say that. It's only a guess by Isaacson based on his Indian material, and he has been working mainly with Indian material. So that's all I can contribute to the question.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Intriguing to ask, because as you said, some texts would allow monks to engage in sexual yoga if you can have this full sort of insight that the partner is not ordinary woman. But then other texts.
But that's tantric texts. And we really don't know. The big question, of course, is, you know, to which extent was this tantric subculture part of the mainstream culture? Mm. Yeah. Mm. So, was it, you know, like just hidden and kept secret and only practiced in the jungle somewhere or in the mountains, which is probably the case, because I mean, even, you know, like if a mainstream like monks in a monastery know the Hivatra Tantra, I personally would feel very uncomfortable, you know, to be with a like actual woman, you know, sitting in a monk cell and doing tantric practice. I mean, I would much more prefer to go to the jungle, you know, or to other places and be much more undisturbed. Yeah.
Yeah, but just the presence of the mere text, you know, or the mere presence of the text, I mean, wouldn't necessarily indicate that monks also took up sexual yoga. Right now, if you look at Tibetan monasteries, you find these yogini tantras everywhere. You will find sexual yoga texts everywhere, but monks are monks nonetheless. You know, yeah. Dalai Lama gives Kalachakra empowerment all the time. That doesn't mean he is himself not a monk.
Well, I think
so, but they're talking about this,
to it. Yeah. Mm. I'm sorry, I didn't want to interrupt you.
There was also an account of how Maitripa got expelled from the monastery. Can you elaborate a bit on that?
Well, first, I didn't want to write about
this story about expulsion.
I didn't want to write about that at all, because first of all, like in the Indian Sanskrit text, there is no such expulsion story. And in the early Tibetan, like Trikung material also, and in the Tucci, like life story, Tibetan life story of Maitripa, it's absent. So, Isaacson also, he and Francesco Sfera, they think that this expulsion stories were just later, like included in Maitripa's life story. And Karl Brunhölzl also observed that it became a kind of topos, you know, for a siddha. It was just something you needed in your CV, so to say, you know, like, so it's just like us academics, you know, like once in a lifetime, you have to edit like proceedings of a conference or something. So for a siddha, you know, once in a lifetime, you need to be kicked out of a monastery. So it's kind of, you know, like a must, you know, for your CV. And moreover, you know, like Carl also thinks, you know, like the expulsion story of Maitripa was somehow mixed up with another siddha. And so, but they are interesting. Mm. And I mean, I was asked, you know, like Casey told me, Klaus, look, you know, so many people know that about the expulsion story when they hear Maitripa, and you have to write a short chapter on that. And so I did a bit of research, and I'm glad I did it.
So a siddha has to be a maverick of sort.
Yeah, okay. Right. Yeah.
But then they are made siddhas by their philosophy and by their sort of wisdom and insight. So
That's also what I think. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You give a lot of focus on Maitripa's philosophy, you know. So it's not quite clear to me whether Maitripa considers Yogacara also as a sort of authentic Mahayana sort of right path or right view, or he considers only Madhyamaka.
Well, thank you for asking that. Historically speaking, he first studied Yogacara from his master, Ratnakara Shanti. And then eventually he became a Madhyamaka. But he always estimated Yogacara very much. But he always used then in his writings, Yogacara as a stepping stone to Madhyamaka, but as an important one. Yeah, he doesn't say Yogacara is a deviation or like, why not immediately go for Rangtong? Why not immediately saying everything is empty, including the mind? No, he's not like that. He says it's very important to go this step and say everything is mind only. And then you continue and say, well, even mind is empty of an inherent existence. Mm. And you find it in his philosophy, like in his gradual path. You find the different tenets, you know, you have Yogacara, and you, then you have the final Madhyamaka tenets. And you find this structure also in other texts, like presentation of that everything is an illusion or like a dream. He always, you know, like goes to Yogacara and then proceeds to Madhyamaka. And you find the same structure also like in tantric writings, in the creation and the completion stage practice. Like the mandala, you know, like in the center, you have Akshobhya, and Akshobhya stands for Yogacara emptiness. He uses also the term seal of Akshobhya, and Akshobhya being in the middle of the mandala, it seals all the Tathagatas, which means that you realize the five skandhas, which in their pure form are the five Tathagatas, are mind only. So, and then you have a Vajrasattva on top of Akshobhya, and the Vajrasattva and the seal of Vajrasattva stands for Madhyamaka emptiness. So once you have established everything is mind only, you still have to establish that this mind, this non-dual mind, is also empty of inherent existence. And you find it also in the completion stage, but that's very technical, and maybe we don't have enough time to discuss that, but you find this structure all over his works. And he went again against his teacher, Ratnakarashanti. And at some point, Ratnakarashanti has posted a letter on a beam in the monastery saying that, I don't agree with your view and with your Madhyamaka interpretation. And but it never came to a public dispute, so it didn't happen. But he followed Ratnakarashanti in his tantric interpretations, like in the completion stage practice explanations. He was in line with Ratnakarashanti, and Ratnakarashanti had a very particular interpretation of the Himvatra Tantra, which was not mainstream, and he was loyal to his teacher in tantric matters. But in terms of philosophy, he preferred Madhyamaka.
I think one of the verses that I've come across before and have seen it quoted rather profusely by other commentators in Tibet is this verse from the Tattva Dashaka, 10 verses on reality.
That's very important two verses.
Translation. Translate it as somebody who wishes to know suchness does not find it in the Yogacara tenets of Sakaravada or Niakaravada. Even Madhyamaka, which is not adorned with the words of a guru, is only middling. So he's almost implying Yogacara, Madhyamaka, if you're not done with guru's instructions properly, don't count. They're sort of not the full-fledged view.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it is. So, I mean, first of all, he clearly states that Yogacara is not like providing the like proper model of reality. To come to a definitive realization. So you need Madhyamaka. And then within Madhyamaka, you need a Madhyamaka which is adorned with the pith instructions of the guru. And when you go through the text, you find that it means that like Madhyamaka, of course, you know, like first of all, uses reasoning to establish emptiness. And one of the reasons is that we don't have direct access to emptiness. You need to be on the first level, on the first bodhisattva level, to have a full direct realization of true reality. And below that, you have to use reasoning and deconstruction of this kind of prasanga type of arguments, you know, to deconstruct all wrong models of reality. And then eventually you're left, you know, like in a state where everything is free from mental elaboration. And then, you know, this opens up to Madhyamaka realization. But you can shortcut that by having a guru or a qualified master who has realized his own nature of mind. So he can explain Madhyamaka in a way, or he can use Madhyamaka explanations in such a way that you get a mind-to-mind transmission, in the sense that the true nature of mind or the emptiness of mind can be directly pointed out through these special instructions by the guru. And that's what later was called then Sutra Mahamudra, you know. So, yeah. I'm sorry. I thought you wanted to.
So his approach to yes. So I was saying. So his approach generally to reality is not so much of the sort of reasoning-based apophatic approach of Nagarjuna and the Madhyamikas, but more of the cataphatic approach you find in the the Buddha nature teachings or the Ratnagota Vibhaga, for instance.
Definitely, I would say,
please.
Definitely, but I think it's a combination of both. He is using also logical arguments, and it's not that like critical analysis is not estimated. It is very much, but it can be combined with, as you say, cataphatic approach. And you can see that very nicely in the Tattvadashaka. You have a few verses which establish emptiness in a more traditional way. You have this form is emptiness, emptiness is form, like in the Heart Sutra. And then, you know, he switches in verse 5 in the middle of the text and says, and this emptiness and this true reality can be also like directly experienced. And these dharmas, they are also the factors of existence. They are also luminous as experienced in the Yatha Bhuta Samadhi. So the Yatha Bhuta Samadhi is a meditation like where you have a direct realization of reality as it truly is. And then, you know, like you have the cataphatic approach. And then he's using, that's quite interesting, then he's using Yogacara terms to describe this direct realization of emptiness. And even at, in one of the texts in the Pancha Tathagata Mudra Vivarana, he says that Madhyamaka, which is not based on Rangrik, is not good, is not superior Madhyamaka. So, I mean, that's like a red flag for the Gelugpa, right? I mean, they don't like Rangrik, isn't it? So, and not only that, you know, he said, well, if your Madhyamaka interpretation, you know, if it is not based on Rangrik, it's not a good one, you know. So, but then,
I suppose they are also.
Sorry, I just wanted to say one more
thing. I think there are also other red flags.
I just wanted to say one more sentence to that. And then he says, but, you know, like, and one possible opponent, but how is this possible? And he said, well, there's no problem. It's still this like non-abiding Madhyamaka. It's this non-foundational Madhyamaka. Because like even Rangrik is only dependently arising. So that's quite interesting, you know, like because he's not reifying. He's not saying there's an ultimate, truly existing Rangrik. So, and that means, you know, like he's using the experiential terms of Yogacara, not in an ontological way, but only to describe this direct experience of emptiness. And so I think philosophically, I would still like say that he's more on the Rangtong side. Yeah, my chipa. Or at least, you know, like.
But so he certainly denies a discrete sort of hypostatic rangring that the Chittamatra may
promote. Exactly.
But he still, but he accepts a reflexive awareness of an interdependent or dependently originated nature.
Yeah, it's more the type of Mahamudra style Rangrik. It's he glosses it also with luminosity, and it's this kind of like a non-dual like realization, and which is also luminous.
Yeah.
So it's not, it doesn't have a subject part and an object part.
It's this very, also Rangrik part that you find in Prajnaparamitas.
That's that can be interpreted in this way. I mean, there are other interpretations of Rangrik.
Plus, I have this other sort of question, this curiosity. So Maitripa brings up luminosity many times in his works. And he is given the credit of having rediscovered the sublime continuum or Ratnagotra Vibhaga, Chidlama, and Dharma, Dharmata Vibhaga. But he doesn't mention Deshinshik Piningpo or Deshik Ningpo or Sangik Kham, some of the terms that we normally use. So what could be the reason? Is there any specific reason, or is it just that he didn't mention it?
I mean, I don't know why he's not using this particular term, Tathagatagarbha, but by meaning, he's definitely doing it. And well, first of all, he quotes a verse from the Ratnagotra Vibhaga. I think it's from the second chapter, 61 or something. And it's a very difficult one and a very unique verse, which explains the emerging form kayas from the Dhammakaya. And you don't find this verse anywhere else. So you can, from a Indological point of view, you can definitely say that he knew the Ratnagotra Vibhaga, the Gyulama, the standard Indian work of Buddha nature. So it's not only the myth that he rediscovered the Gyulama in Stupa. And then again, the Tattva Dashaka, you find, you know, like that enlightenment explained as suchness, which has become free from stains. So you remember, you know, in the Gyulama, Buddha nature is explained as suchness accompanied by stains, and enlightenment is suchness free from stains. So he says, you know, like enlightenment is suchness becoming free from or becoming immaculate. And that clearly shows, you know, that it's exactly the same way as Buddha nature is understood in the Gyulama or in the Ratnagotra Vibhaga. And also his positive description of this direct experience of emptiness, I think, you know, like you can interpret the Gyulama and Buddha nature texts in such a way. It would very much make sense to do that.
The other sort of curious thing that I came across is he considered Sautantrika as almost a Mahayana or Paramita based tenet system. Unlike all others,
I was also surprised. In the commentary by Gölötzsava, who quotes the Tattva Ratnavali. Gölötzsava, if I remember right, somehow explained that even the Sautrantika already, they start caring about other sentient beings. So, they are not including all sentient beings in their search for enlightenment. But then, you know, the Yogacara do not either, you know, because in the Yogacara, you have a cutoff potential. So and Yogacara qualifies for being Mahayana. So, and they don't include all sentient beings. So you might as well include Sautrantika. So I got this kind of explanation from Gölötzsava, which is quite smart, you know, its interpretation. He shows also that he defends Maitripa. He likes Maitripa very much, you know, so he gives logical explanations for his categories. We should talk about Amanasikara also, no?
I was going to come to that, because that is like the trademark of Maitripa. mean, when you earlier mentioned about red flags, I think this is one red flag to some of the Sakyapas and Gelugpas. So, yeah, tell us about Amanasikara.
Well, I mean, Amanasikara is a very old Buddhist term. You find it already in the Pali Canon, in the Chula Sunyata Sutta, where the monk is said to withdraw his attention from the village, and he directs his attention to the forest, and then he withdraws his attention from the forest and directs it to his breath. And you just go on like that. And what you see from early on, that Amanasikara is always combined with another form of Manasikara. So you withdraw your attention, which is a possible translation of Amanasikara, from something, and you direct it to something else. So, in Yogacara, in the Yogacara works, you withdraw your attention from duality or conceptual construction, but you direct it to the non-conceptual sphere. So it's always combined with a positive element. And it has to do with this Buddhist notion that just becoming completely quiet and not to think anymore, that's not enough for Buddhahood. You know, that there need to be also a prajna element. There need to be an active form of assessment of true reality in order to become a Buddha. And Maitripa solves this problem by presenting on top of the normal sutra explanation of Amanasikara, of withdrawing one's attention from conceptuality. He gives a tantric explanation, and he says, well, when first he does some grammatical analysis and ends up by saying that emptiness is luminosity. So the privative I, the negative particle in front. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he says it stands for shunyata. For first, he says it's a word. Amanasikara is a compound in which the middle word has been dropped, Madhyapada Lopi Samasa in Sanskrit. And you have a lot of such compounds. Like, for example, you have the compound vegetable king. So it means a king who is fond of vegetable. So you need to add a word in between. So he argues that Amanasikara belongs to this class of compounds. And the word which has been dropped is utpada. So you have to say anutpada Manasikara. And non-arising anutpada is a synonym for emptiness. So he says, well, it's a mental engagement with emptiness. And then he continues and say, well, but this emptiness is luminosity, and the kind of manasikara, the kind of engagement with emptiness, is not a kind of conceptual one, but it's called svadhisthana in Sanskrit, dakla chinchilapa. So it means a self-empowerment. It's one of the completion stage practices in the Panchakrama, in Nagarjuna's Panchakrama. So it's kind of, if you then, put things together, it just means, well, self-empowerment within mind's luminosity. And that's then a positive tantric interpretation. Mm-hmm. And then I was thinking for a long time, I thought, well, it doesn't feel right, to translate Amanasikara simply as a non-mentation, because that's only 50% of the meaning.
Yeah.
And then I thought, so maybe we need a kind of positive term, that we need to. And then I thought, well, I call it non-conceptual realization. Just and that's that translation is only valid for Maitripa. I wouldn't use this kind of translation for other texts. But in the case of Maitripa, I think it's a good translation.
Yeah, I was reading Pema Karpo some weeks ago, and I came across these sort of negative and positive interpretations of Anamasika.
He has it from there. From in the Chachen Gyalwe Gensu,
Yes, indeed. Now reading Maitripa, I can get even more clarification. And your justification of Amanasikara translation, I read the Tibetan one, it was so difficult to understand. And then I read your English and it was so clear. It was much easier to understand through your translation. And I was thinking,
thank you so much.
Like you were sort of working with the English translation, how non-mentation doesn't translate fully, particularly the second connotation. I was thinking the Tibetan translation, Yila Mijepa, doesn't translate either. So
yeah,
I was thinking,
exactly. Yeah.
We should have Yila Mijepa for the first meaning and Ayila Jepa for the second.
Yeah exactly. Yeah, it's true. Yeah. I mean, there are like advantages and disadvantages of coming up with like interpretative translations. So one thing is, oh, we just translate what there is, and it would be a kind of Google Translate, right? So, I mean, and but then, you know, like you don't catch the meaning properly. So if you have creative or interpretative like translations, it's much easier, you know, to catch the meaning. And there is something, an interesting story. I visited Kopan Monastery and I was like discussing with some of the geshe there in the library, and I asked him, well, what are you going to study? And he said, oh, we are studying Madhyamaka Avatara. And then I said, oh, what kind of text, what kind of commentary are you using? And he said, well, we prefer to study it on the basis of English translations. It's so much easier to understand. I mean, that was not a joke, you know. Like, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it was a joke, and I didn't get it. But you know, they really appreciate, you know, because like in English translation, we always add in brackets some missing words, or like we give interpretative translations, creative translations sometimes, just to convey the proper meaning. And
And footnotes, no, they help a lot.
Footnotes also, yeah, exactly, yeah.
And your book, of course, covers much more. There is a lot of discussion on the Abhishekas, the empowerment, and then the four mudras, then the four joys. So I don't think we will have time to go through all this, and probably it's not also appropriate to deal with all the tantric materials here. Let's see what the audience has to ask. I think there are a couple questions coming. So, Marcus.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, there are. There are a number of questions, and we could start the question and answer period. So we have a few questions people wrote in the chat, but if you all would like to raise your hands, I can actually allow you to speak directly to us. So please go ahead and use that raise hand option down at the bottom of Zoom. But while you're doing that, why don't we start with one of the first questions that came out of the chat, which is about this Rangrik, and actually there's several questions about it. So I'll just summarize a bunch of these questions with one of them from John Newman asking, does Rangrik represent Svasamvedana, sorry, I pronounced that incorrectly, or Pratyatmavedaniya?
Yeah, it's
and people are basically asking, what is Rangrik, and could you just explain that a little bit more?
Yeah, the Sanskrit word used is Svasamvedana, and you know, like Rangrik would be a standard Tibetan translation of that, and it refers to the capacity of every conscious event, not only to perceive an object, but also to be aware of the fact that it is perceiving. So it's according to the Yogacara philosophy, every conscious moment also has this ability to be aware of itself. And that is refuted by Madhyamaka on the basis that a sword cannot cut itself, yeah, just to use a standard example in this refutation of Rangrik. And this kind of refutation of Rangrik presupposes that there is a perceiving subject and a perceived object in this process of Rangrik. And that's basically considered a valid refutation of Rangrig by Mahamudra masters, and I would say also by Maitripa, yeah, because he's not accepting this ordinary Yogacara type of Rangrig, which is also, the other one would be like the kind of direct realization of luminous nature in a non-conceptual way, such that there is no more subject and object. So you could say, well, then, you know, like you cannot talk about it anymore. And that's right, you know, you should not talk about it. But you can use language just to convey a realization to an informed audience. If you tell your audience, look, you know, I'm going to try to explain something which is inexpressible, and you have to know that it cannot be, it should not be reified, but I'm still using terms like Rangrig or luminosity just to try to bring over the meaning of it, this kind of realization. Mm-hmm. So that would be the Mahamudra, like that type of Rangrig, which Trungpa Rinpoche also distinguishes, by the way.
Interesting. There's a few more questions just following up on that, related to that. So I'll just ask them now. Is it possible Maitripa prefers the term Rangrig as a synonym of Buddha nature, since he claims it is naturally luminous?
And then, yes, I agree. That would be because, you know, like Rangrig, like Svasamvedana, would be a synonym for luminosity for him. And I agree that that would be the term which comes close to Buddha nature. Yeah.
Interesting. And does Maitripa distinguish between relative and ultimate Rangrig?
No, he doesn't do that. No, I've never come across such a distinction. Mm. Yeah. But he points out shortcomings of the Yogacara philosophy. You have it in the Tattvaratnavali. He presents Yogacara, but he also explains what's wrong with it. And he does not explicitly say that Yogacara Rangrig is wrong, but it follows from his refutation of other aspects of Yogacara philosophy.
Right. Interesting. Could you say more? There's a question about freeing Maitripa's Mahamudra from being Sutrayana. They're asking about, is your sense of Svadhisthana as used by Maitripa now that it's just luminosity, or does it have the quality of pith instructions? I'm not sure if that question was fully fleshed out there, but yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, based on what I said, like it's a good conclusion because, you know, like in the Tattva Dashaka, you first have this kind of analytical approach to ultimate reality, which is always negative. It's not arising, not abiding, not ceasing, and so on. And then, you know, like, but this like phenomena which are analyzed to be empty in such a way, they are also luminous as directly experienced. So, you know, like, and this, you know, like corresponds to the tantric interpretation of Amanasikara in the sense of a Svatishtana, like realization of luminosity. So yes, I agree. This is what like makes Madhyamaka special. So if it is adorned by pith instructions of the guru, yeah, then it becomes superior Madhyamaka. And how does it become superior? Because the pith instructions, they enable a direct realization of emptiness, and such that you can describe it by luminosity or by Svatishtana if you want. Yeah, but that's my own interpretation, and obviously also one of my like audience with which I agree.
Yeah. Interesting, thank you. Mm-hmm. Great. It seems like most people are wanting to chat their questions instead of speak them. So let's see. Mm-hmm. John Newman's asking, Rangrig is used as an abbreviation for both Sanskrit terms. Kapstein noted some instances in which Tibetan authors conflate the two terms. Mm-hmm. Thoughts on this?
So I know like Matthew Kapstein was it is related to Soso Rangirigpa, and so it's a Pratyatma Vidaniya in Sanskrit. And that literally means, you know, like to be experienced by yourself. So, you know, like, well, I can tell you what, well, this and that, like a realization like is like, you know, or like a realized master may tell you, well, Buddhahood is such and such. But in the end, you know, like you have to realize it for your own. You have to find out yourself. So that's one meaning of this Soso Rangirikpa. And then that would not necessarily be Rangrik. And that's what Matthew Kapstein basically points out. And he's fully right. Yeah, but if you become a Buddha, you know, and you find out enlightenment on your own, yeah, then, you know, like it's this kind of Mahamudra Rangrik of this direct realization beyond subject object. There was another question, I'm sorry.
Yeah, there's a number of other questions coming too. Mm-hmm. One changes the subject a little. It's asking, can you please talk a bit more about the biographical aspect since birth to enlightenment? Thank you.
Sure, yeah, I'm sorry. We just jumped immediately to the juicy points of the biography and got stuck with it.
That's
right. Yeah, but one has to say, we don't know that much about Maitripa. The life stories are not more than a few pages, and so. But we know that he came from a Brahmin family and was a very good Sanskrit scholar. So he got this traditional Brahmin learning, became a very good Sanskritist and was a grammarian, and he knew his Brahmin religion very, very well. And then he turned up at one of the gates of Nalanda monastery and started to challenge Buddhist philosophy. And well, his mistake, or maybe his luck, was that he ran into Naropa, and he lost the debate with Naropa. And then, as it was, you know, in ancient times, you know, like you lose a dispute or an argument, then you have to accept the other's religion or philosophy. So he became a Buddhist. And he studied under Naropa, and then eventually also under Ratnakarashanti, and he just got the full teachings. He just went through the full curriculum at Nalanda and became a really learned Yogacara and Madhyamaka master. And he also studied, and that's quite interesting, we find in the life story also that he also studied Tantra at Nalanda. So it was also under Raga Vajra, that was his tantric master. And of course, he got also tantric teachings from Nakarashanti and Naropa. But, you know, like he was already receiving formal tantric practice. And then in Nalanda. And then at some point, he left the monastery, either, he just, you know, was kicked out, or we don't know exactly why, or whether he was forced to leave, or whether he was going on his own. And the thing is that he was giving a prophecy and by Tara in a Kasarpa temple in eastern India that he should look for Shavaripa, a big, great Mahasiddha who lived in the Indian Deccan in the mountains, you know, south of the Ganga plain. And eventually he met Shavaripa and got some special instructions, Mahamudra teachings. And we are also taught that he got an empowerment by simply, Shavaripa was simply singing a song, one of Saraha's songs, which is very famous, you know. So it says, the qualities of the guru enter the mind of the disciple without any tantra and without any mantra. And the qualities are just like in the palm of your hand. And that was all that was the entire empowerment he got. And that means, you know, he must have received a kind of direct mind-to-mind transmission based on a Doha by Saraha. But there are also other accounts that he got teachings on formal tantric practice on the four mudras and so on creation and completion stage. And then Shavaripa like told him to return to the monastic milieu and teach Mahamudra in the big monasteries. And that's what he did. And then he started to combine traditional scholarship like Yogacara Madhyamaka philosophy with Mahamudra teachings. And the outcome is the cycle, the Amanasikara cycle, which I have translated in my book. And that's mainly like, that's the main stations in his life.
Mm.
I mean, one thing maybe we should add that he was doubtful of having received an empowerment from Shavaripa because he was just showing him a golden vase and singing a song. And since he was trained in formal tantra, he knew that this was not a proper empowerment. So he was kind of apprehensive that he didn't get a fully qualified empowerment. And then as a consequence of that, like Shavaripa prophesied that he wouldn't get the full Mahamudra Siddhi in his lifetime, but only like after he has passed away, he will like get the full Mahamudra Siddhi. But well, that's all myth, you know, in the life story.
His encounter with Shavaripa is quite sort of legend laden, you could say. It's quite a description. It's very difficult to sort of hold on to a historical event like story, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, sure. It's really, once I did a paper on Vanaratna, and he met Shavaripa and got teachings and I think even a Chakra Samurai empowerment. I don't know for sure anymore, but then I thought, well, Vanaratna lived in the 14th century. Then, you know, like I found out, oh, Vibhuti Chandra also met Shavaripa. Oh, he lived in the 12th century. And then, you know, I said, oh, Maitripa met Shavaripa. Oh, that was even 11th century. So what's going on, you know, like, and then, you know, like you look at the life story of Shavaripa and it is said he's even alive now. So you can go to Southern India, it's somewhere in Andhra Pradesh, you know, like at the big Danya Kataka Stupa where the Buddha taught the Kala Chakra. So you go a few days in the jungle to the north and you'll find Shavaripa. So that's what people say, you know. So he's definitely not like a normal person like us. Mm-hmm. He's a mythical person. And I might even dare to say maybe he's not a person of bone and flesh. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but. He seems to be more like a transworldly bodhisattva or siddha.
And we have an incarnation line here in Bhutan coming down from Shavaripa. So to complicate things.
Yeah, Shavaripa was said to be a generic term for tribes. Yeah, yeah. Shavaras, you know, Shavaras are mountain people. And, you know, like they are kind of looked down, you know, like by the establishment. Mm. Yeah, they are well backward, you know, like not educated people from the mountains, and so Shavaripata, you know, it's just like somebody from these mountain tribes, literally, or Shavareshwara is another name, you know, the master or the lord of the Shavaras, so the lord of the mountain people.
Mm.
Yeah, he's a very interesting figure. Yeah.
Mm. Mm. Well, I want to go back to the earlier topic of Rangrig. When we use the term Rangrig, often it is used to refer to Swasamvedana. And then when you use the term Sosurangrigpa, it's used as a translation for Patayatma Vedaneya. Mm. And as Gapstan pointed out, they are sometimes sort of used loosely and interchangeably. But on the whole, Rangrig is used more to the self-cognizing aspect of the ordinary consciousness, of all consciousness. And then the Sosurangrigpa is more of a wisdom, a sort of an insight, which is non-dualistic in nature, isn't it? And it's not only about enlightenment to be sought by oneself as an individual or person, but it sort of gives also the description of how the awareness sort of has the cognition or knowledge of emptiness and luminosity without any subject object duality, isn't it? Yeah. So
that's a very important point, and thank you for giving me again a chance to clarify this. You're perfectly right. Pratyatma Vidaniya definitely means literally to be found out by yourself. So the Buddha teaches you what Buddhahood is like, but you have to find it out yourself. And then, you would argue, well, if you're really approaching Buddhahood and you're on such an advanced level, how are you going to find out yourself, Buddhahood? So it would be in this way where you go beyond subject-object duality. So it must be a Svasamvedana type of finding out yourself. I mean, you can argue like that, but of course you can also point out that, well, the term doesn't mean Svasamvedana, and you're perfectly right. And then, it's true, Svasamvedana is a term used for self-awareness also in Yogacara. And a critique could say, well, there is only that. And that's already refuted by Shantideva and by others, by Chandrakirti and so on. And we don't like to hear about that anymore. I understand this approach, and it's a very valid tradition, but there is this kind of direct realization of emptiness. And when you directly realize emptiness, you should stop talking. It's a little bit like in the Lalita Vistara, when the Buddha says, I've found enlightenment and dharma, which is so profound, and it's impossible to teach it, and I should go to the forest and stay silent. And then the story, Indra and Brahma, they came to the Buddha, please teach the Dharma. And so he spent the remaining 45 years of his life to teach what is not what is ineffable, which cannot be put in words. So we are in a little bit similar situation here, so you have a direct realization of emptiness, and then you should remain quiet because it's non-conceptual beyond what. But then, you could just, out of compassion, because you're so overwhelmed by this experience that wake up, there is this possibility, you can also go through life with this experience, and then you try to communicate it, and you're using terms, experiential terms like rangrig or luminosity, even though they should not be used. So that's all I can say on the topic.
Yes, indeed. We have many, many volumes of Prajnaparamita, which starts with more or less the phrase saying it's inexpressible or ineffable.
So, yes, exactly. So,
there was a question about Buddha native teachings, which I think I should clarify. So the question I was asking Professor Mathis is not about Buddha nature teachings in general. It's more about Ratnagotra Vibhaga, or the Sublime Continuum, Jilama in Tibetan. I think that was the text that Maitripa discovered, rediscovered from his stupa, said to have rediscovered. But there are other Buddha nature teachings, the sutras, and then even the writings attributed to Nagarjuna, they have been around even before Maitripa. So I think—
There is one more important link also to the corpus of Maitreya works. In the Sika Nyadesha, in the Maitripa's work on empowerment, he says that Mahamudra, is related, to non-mentation, and at least according to Ramapala's commentary, it's related to Amanasikara, and he quotes later on in this Mahamudra section, the Avikalpa Pravesha Dharani, that's the magic formula of entering or realizing the non-conceptual. It's like a sutra, the Dharanis, the kind of formulas which you paint on prayer flags, but it's non-tantric, and it's about, abandoning characteristic signs or tsema or nimitta. And there are different nimittas. They are the ordinary characteristic signs of duality, of conceptually created duality. Then there are the nimittas of the remedy, and then there are the nimittas of emptiness, and there are the nimittas of close to realization, the kind of pseudo-enlightenment experiences, which are experienced on high levels. And they all need to be abandoned by amanasikara. So they all should be abandoned by not becoming mentally engaged. And so this teaching by Ramapala is directly related to Mahamudra. And Maitripa himself, he explains Mahamudra in the Sikhanya Disha also in a very similar way. And then, you know, like in the commentary by Ramapala, he quotes the Avikalpa Pravishadharani. And the Avikalpa Pravishadharani, the abandoning of the four nimittas, it's also a very like important point in the Dhamma Dhammata Vibhaga. When you generate a non-conceptual wisdom, which is the basis of fundamental transformation, you have to do this kind of practice. You have to develop this wisdom by abandoning the nimittas through non-mentation. And here you have the connection to the Dhamma Dhammata Vibhaga, right? And on a doctrinal ground, not only on mythology. And you know, the Dhamma Dhammata Vibhaga, parts of it are a commentary on the Enlightenment chapter of the Ratnakotra Vibhaga. Anyway, the two are very closely related. And so here you have the connection to the Maitreya works.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Klaus. I think we're already over an hour. Really enjoyable conversation. I was actually quite struck by Maitripa's style of writing, short, sort of precise, inspirational works. Now, most of his works are quite short. They're like the Dohas in many ways. So,
yeah, definitely. Yeah, you can see the signature of Sarada there. Yeah, it's very closely related. And yeah, they are this kind of very sharp and crisp mind-to-mind direct instructions. I was talking about this in 2019 when I was in Thimphu at the Vajrayana conference, by the way.
I missed that.
And His Majesty the King also was visiting us, and that was a very joyful event. I hope we have soon again a chance, you know, to meet again in Thimphu. And
yes, indeed. I think you should come and read your new book here.
I would really like, but you should give me a visa long enough, you know, to go into all the details.
Okay, we'll do that. I'll try.
That would be very kind.
Yes, but for the audience, I think the book is really wonderful. I think it's a very good book for not only scholarly study and understanding of Maitripa, but also for practitioners. There are lots of jewels in there. And I thought I'll conclude the session by reading two verses from your translation. One from Elucidation of Non-Abiding. I found this verse nice, very moving. The entire wealth of a Buddhist can be taken to be the non-abiding of awareness, but only when such a realization is cultivated for the sake of sentient beings.
That's a very nice one. Yeah, thank you for pointing this verse out. Very essential one,
With instructions on settling the mind through a yoga practice that is without effort, tasting the taste of emptiness. Even meditation is realization. This is because through meditation with insight, everything becomes Mahamudra. So, thank you for that.
Well, you picked really two important verses, and I thank you for promoting my book so much. And yeah, it's very kind of you.
Yeah, we should thank you for coming up with this book. It's a really beautiful book, wonderful for both scholars and practitioners. So with that, thank you, Klaus, for joining us. Marcus, shall we sort of end the session?
Yes, thank you all so much. Thank you so much for being
Marcus
here.
Marcus, also, thank you so much. to you and Satra Foundation and our long-term cooperation. And Yeah, I hope I was not like going away too far from your favorite topic of Buddha nature.
not at all.
That's wonderful. The topic today is Maitripa, not Buddha nature.
Yeah. That's wonderful. Yeah, no, thank you so much. And also thank you to Casey and to Nico at Shambhala Publications for this series.
I should really say that that was really first class, you know, editing and yeah, they treated me very, very professionally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Excellent.
I really like Shambhala Publications. So good
wonderful.
Publishing
Thank
house.
You.
Yeah, very happy.
Yeah,
with
and there's the whole series that this book is a part of, the Lives of the Masters series, is really interesting. And there's a number of books out now, everything from Tsongkhapa to Goenka, Genden Chopo, Dogen, Third Karmapa, Atisha, mm-hmm. and now Maitripa. So. It's really a wonderful series of these shorter books.
Right.
So I'll send in the chat, I put the link and I'll put that on the Facebook website as well. So
thank you so
much.
Yeah,
wonderful. Mm. So thank you. Yeah. And I hope you all have a wonderful day.
Yes,
yeah, you too.
Morning, evening, day.
Yeah, Kama, you're going to bed now, right?
Yes, yes. It's 11:12 here right now. Yes.
Yeah. Well, good night then.
Yes, I'll dream of my tripa.
We are having dinner now.
Okay. Well, enjoy your dinner.
Yeah, enjoy your morning in the States.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.